Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Hope everyone is doing well. I'm Trevor Lane, Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. Guys, get the NBA Finals going on. It's mid-June. We've got the draft coming up in just a couple of weeks. It's an exciting time on the NBA calendar.
It's good to see you guys. I think this NBA Finals has been profoundly interesting. Actually, before we get started, I'd love to hear your guys' take on who you think is going to win.
Well, I picked Spurs in six, but I, you know, that quickly went off the rails after game one and especially game two. I mean, it's been a one possession game with under 2 minutes left in all three games. So I think there's a version of this series where Wemby does not have that colossal mistake at the end of game two, and maybe the Spurs pull off the win and it's a 2-1 lead right now for San Antonio. Of course, there's the desperation factor where San Antonio came out with a certain level in game three that I don't know if they have, if it's 1-1, but I'm still leaning. I'd probably go Knicks in six right now would be my prediction. But what about you, Trevor?
I had Knicks in seven going into the series. I think they present some challenges as long as they stick to their guns and continue to go to them. I think Cat has been phenomenal in this series. I think they played a bit uncharacteristic last night. That was a bit surprising, but all in all, you figure the Knicks were not happy with the game, with the way the game was officiated last night. They put some of it was they fouled way too much. They put the Spurs in the bonus way too early. It seemed like, felt like every quarter they were putting the Spurs in the bonus super early. All of that being said, shooting poorly, playing poorly, they still only lost by four. So I think there's actually some positives to take away from last night's game for New York. Now, game four, of course, is pivotal. If the Knicks win it, then we have a pretty good idea of which way the series is going to go. And if the Spurs win it, then, well, it becomes a best of three and San Antonio has home court. So I'm expecting an absolutely epic game four, but I'm still going to roll with the Knicks, even though the Spurs did find a way to win at MSG last night. I think the Knicks find a way to get the job done ultimately. But, you know, if Wemby keeps dropping 30-plus points like he did last night, then who knows? Maybe San Antonio does come back in this thing.
I picked Knicks in six. I will say that after I did my film session this morning, I was pretty concerned about some things on the Knicks front, specifically like they really don't look comfortable dribbling the basketball unless their name is Jalen Brunson, which I think is one of the realities of kind of the personnel group, in the sense that, like, you look at Harper, Castle, and Fox, and they're all professional ball handlers who have been handling the basketball their entire lives. Like, they're just old school guards, you know? And it's like Mikal Bridges can dribble, but that's not really what he gets paid to do. Like, OG Anunoby can dribble, but that's, you know, the Cat can dribble, Josh Hart can dribble, but in their best lineup, and even if you swap Josh Hart out for Landry Shamet, in their best lineups, Jalen Brunson's really their only like professional ball handler. And I really like, for all the people who are criticizing Brunson for shooting too much, and he is, and that criticism is valid, I also just think that they are kind of succumbing to the reality of this is a big physical ball pressure team. And no one really feels comfortable dribbling the basketball other than Jalen Brunson. And it's kind of like Jedi mind tricking the Knicks into playing an old brand of their basketball, which is how they lost in previous playoff runs, which is way too much Brunson. And the Brunson groups have really struggled to score. Cat, did you guys know if Cat has 0 points in the fourth quarter in this series?
0 points. He's 0-for-6 shooting in the fourth quarter. Had four shot attempts last night, and that was before that. Obviously, he had one shot attempt in each quarter in the fourth. That was what I was gonna ask you next, Jason. Why is that? Are the Knicks freezing him out here? Why is Karl Anthony Towns disappearing in the fourth quarter?
So again, I think everyone's to blame, because most of Cat's shot attempts in the fourth quarter in this series have been at the end of sequences, like play finishing sequences. And I think there's something to be said about like the play style when Brunson's off the floor is very much Cat in the middle of the floor with the basketball. Like, they had a stretch last night in the game where like Cat is just operating at the top of the key, possession after possession after possession. They're getting a lot of good looks and knocking them down. Between Brunson being more willing to give up the basketball, Cat being more willing to go get the basketball and be like, give me the damn ball, him advocating to Mike Brown, Mike Brown advocating to the team, everybody involved needs to come together and be like, hey, this isn't how we play. This isn't how we got to the finals. I know that they're struggling to, I know that we are struggling to handle the ball pressure, but we have to get the ball out of Jalen's hands and not like there were in the film session I recorded this morning, there were like literally like 7 or 8 0 pass possessions where Brunson literally didn't pass the basketball a single time during the entire 24-second shot clock and just threw something up at the end. So there's like legitimately a team-wide identity crisis that they're experiencing offensively really over the last three halves, because that's how the Spurs came back in game 2-2 down the stretch. So I think it's more one of those things where like, I think when both teams are at their best, the Knicks are clearly a little bit better in this matchup, but it's like the Knicks can certainly lose this series by kind of degenerating back to Brunson ball and just kind of playing directly into San Antonio's strengths. So it's like, to put it very simply, of all the matchup advantages that either team has, Brunson's not the advantage in the series. He's just not. He's not the thing the Knicks have that gives the Spurs problems. Cat gives them problems. OG gives them problems. Josh Hart gives them problems. They have Jose Alvarado gives them problems, like small, really fast speed in open space, right? So like, it's more just the more you lean on Brunson, the more you're playing directly into the Spurs' hands.
That's why I picked San Antonio to win the series. But are you sticking with Knicks in six?
Did we lose Jason's audio, or is that just me?
Can you guys hear me? Audio. Hold on.
And now I can hear
there
you.
There we go. Now we got you.
Yeah, sorry. That happened to me just a little bit ago. It must be a StreamYard issue, because it happened when I was in with the Sharper Square guys earlier. But basically, to make a long story short, like, I'm sticking with my Knicks and Six pick, but I was concerned by the film, and I would not be the least bit surprised if the Spurs came back to win this series.
So swinging this towards the Lakers, what can we take away from this series? Like, is there anything that we're seeing happening on either the Knicks side or the Spurs side that we say that needs to be a key moving forward for this Lakers team in terms of evolving this team in the modern NBA and what they need to focus on moving forward? Jovan, to put you on the spot, why don't I start with you here? What have you seen in this series that you think the Lakers need? I know, I'm throwing you the grenade here. I'm stalling a little bit to give you time to process here. What do you think the Lakers could take away from this series in terms of stylistically that they need to incorporate into next season?
There are several things I would start with. If you look at every perimeter player in this series, so I mean, you could argue like 1 through 4 or at least 1 through 3. With the exception of Jalen Brunson, every player is at least an average defender, if not an above average defender. So I think that shows you the level that your group needs to be at in terms of like everyone on this, like, you know, De'Aaron Fox, I guess, is maybe like an average-ish defender, though I think in certain matchups he could be a positive. But, you know, Vassell has really developed defensively. Castle, I think Harper has been underrated with his defense, and I've liked some of his one-on-one defense against Brunson. On the Knicks side, it's Hart and Bridges and Anobi, and Landry Shamet has all of a sudden become a positive defensively, and Jose Alvarado, we know about GTA. So it's like, I think the key is on the perimeter, you need a certain amount of speed, athleticism, defense, and the Lakers have clearly not had that for several years now. And so if you go into a future with building around Luka and Austin, like, everybody else has to be at a certain level defensively. And I think the Knicks are more applicable here, where like Kat has had a really strong defensive postseason, and he, I think, had a solid defensive regular season. But for most of his career, Kat has been viewed as like at best a neutral defender, if not a negative defender. Jalen Brunson, size limitations. I think he holds up well in like post-ups and ISOs just because of he's a fire hydrant, but like in general, he can be shot over. He's not a good rebounder, etc. So they have a couple limitations in their starting group with two of their best players defensively, but they have surrounded them with the Harts and Ananobis and Bridges and Alvarados and Mitchell Robinsons. And it's like this just army of motor and energy and athleticism and toughness and defense. And you contrast that with the Lakers and their build, and it's just like, they don't have the same caliber of supporting cast players and role players. So I think if the Lakers are truly committing to Luka's our North Star, as Rob Pelinka said, Austin we view as a number two or number three, everybody else has to fit that mold of a Bridges, a Hart, Alvarado, a Shamit, a Robinson, and several of their rotation guys don't, right? Like Rui does not fit that mold. Luke Kennard does not fit that mold. DeAndre Ayton does not fit that mold. So I think they got some tough decisions to make with the roster, but I think the Knicks are the model for them of like, you can have a couple of quote unquote defensive liabilities in your starting group and with those guys being stars, if you support them the right way. And I don't think the Lakers have gotten close to supporting them the right way, in several iterations of this roster.
Agreed. And then the challenge with that Knicks build is you got to have the assets to go get an OG Anunoby, to go get a Mikal Bridges. I mean, they gave a billion picks to get Bridges. Trying to be able to find those guys is challenging. Now, some of it too is they've taken a guy who was historically not known as a good defensive player, Landry Shamet, and turned him into at least a net neutral defensive player, a guy who can at least help you on that side of the ball. So part of it has got to be the development process and how well you can fit players into your scheme. But that's been my big takeaway from the series. It's the necessity of high motor players that could play both sides of the ball around your stars. And you've got both teams have plenty of those guys. The Knicks in particular, you mentioned Josh Hart. He does such a phenomenal job impacting the game without necessarily scoring. You've got to be able to find talent like that. And I know, ironically, Josh Hart was a former Laker, but some of it's going to have to come in the form of taking guys that maybe historically weren't known for these things and getting them to buy into the system and the culture around the team. And then the other piece is you've got to go actually find players that have those skill sets. Much easier said than done, but the motor piece to me, I think, is the biggest thing that has been driven home by these finals and the necessity of it and the lack of that for the Lakers right now. Jason, what about you? What do you take away from this series and what can it mean for the Lakers?
So I actually think that this series and specifically the run that the Knicks are on has made me feel like the Lakers are a little closer than we thought, simply because of the fact that matchups end up ultimately dictating what happens in the NBA playoffs substantially more even than just like your overall talent does, because all these teams are talented ultimately. Like the Knicks have a lot of talent, but so did the Boston Celtics, right? So did the Cleveland Cavaliers, so did the Spurs, so did the Nuggets, so did the Thunder. Like all these teams have a lot of talent, some more than others, and that certainly gives you more margin for error, but matchups can get you beat ultimately. And like even though it ended up being the Spurs team that beat the Thunder, all year long they looked a little shaky against teams that could really protect the rim and that had athletes that they can put on Shea. Even Minnesota gave them some issues during the regular season. And so one of the things that I think has been kind of fascinating is like when I look at the Lakers build, I still think the Luka, Austin, LeBron trio is a handful in a playoff series when they're all healthy, because you get that variety of different ways you can attack. Like, oh, this series we're trying to get downhill on Şengün and ball screens, so Austin gets super valuable. But oh, this series we're attacking smalls in matchup attacking situations, so guys like Luka and LeBron become immensely valuable. To Jovan's point, I think there's like a certain mandatory minimum of talent you need in certain position groups. Like the Lakers need a better center. They need a center. Like you look at between Karl Anthony Towns and Mitchell Robinson, for example, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, Victor Wembanyama, Luke Kornet has struggled in this series or in these last couple of series. But like you look at OKC with the Isaiah Hartenstein piece, like I think there's a certain amount of like the Lakers are pretty much like a good center and maybe one or two other pieces from being like, I'm not even, they don't even need to be earth shattering, you know, Herb Jones, Andrew Wiggins, like otherworldly two way players. I think they need a certain mandatory minimum of amount of talent in those two specific position groups, the center spot in those like kind of off ball role player groups, to where then at that point, you look at what happened with the Knicks and look at how, like, you know, people have been saying about Jalen Brunson and Kat a lot of the same things they said about Luka and Austin. How do you build a good defense around these guys? And it's been, you have good defenders around them, but also they themselves buy in and play above their individual reputation defensively. And so I looked at that and I was like, yeah, the Lakers certainly would have less of a chance to escape the Western Conference and to make a deep playoff run than San Antonio or OKC would. But they have legitimate things that they bring to the table that can cause problems for teams in the postseason in terms of their depth of ball handling, their variety of different types of ball handling that they have. And if they can just round out some things on the edges, like I just kept thinking, like, they are a good summer away from being a puncher's chance team. And they're a good summer and a good deadline away from being a legit second tier contender, just like the Knicks were.
Yeah, I think they can get to that level. The question is, how do you add those pieces? And I get a lot of questions every day of like, well, who is that center? Who are those wings? How are they going to get those guys? That's what's going to have to unfold over these next few weeks here as we get into July, when we see free agency play out, of course, the trade market, the draft, all of that. Some of it is they're going to have to find some guys that are diamonds in the rough because they don't have unlimited resources to go out there and get whoever they want, nor are there that many players that are available, particularly when we look at free agency. But I do think that they're not super far up, but there is a gap between the Lakers and where they ultimately need to be. And getting there, you know, the clock's ticking. You got to get this done quickly and find a way to put together a team that can really have that puncher's chance. You know, Luka Doncic was the best player in the world in the month of March. You know, we could say, does he need to be better the rest of the season? Perhaps, but the month of March, he was the best player in the world. And then he pulled his hamstring on April 2nd. Who knows what the playoffs look like if he's continuing to play at that level. But they need to be able to get into the playoffs with a healthy Luka, with a healthy Austin, LeBron, whoever else is on the team. And then they've got to figure it out from there and see if with those pieces, with the right pieces in, can everybody raise the level of their game. I think we've seen some things from Kat where he's gone back to, not all the time, but we've seen some flashes where he's gone back to being the guy he was coming into the NBA in the draft when he was known as a defensive player and not so much an offensive player. So you're right, there are situations where players who are not typically good defensive pieces can actually raise their level of play. They're going to need to have some of that, but they've also got to add pieces that can come in with that motor, the effort on both sides of the ball, and really provide something that this team is currently lacking. So a piece or two, probably the necessity here. You've got to add at least a few players to this roster, but I think there is still potential for them to reach that level. Can they sustain it over the course of the season? Maybe that doesn't matter so much. Maybe what matters is, can you get there come playoff time? Look, the Spurs, the Thunder, they were better than the Knicks during the regular season. And now we've got the Knicks in position where they still, even though it's 2-1 now, they can win a championship. Can you give this Lakers team a chance to do what the Knicks are doing right now? And that's going to be on Rob Pelinka this summer. All right, guys, we're going to be taking your questions, your comments for the remainder of the show. We wanted to spend the bulk of today's show dedicated to you guys, to everybody watching live with us. So throw us your questions, your comments. We're going to get into all of those. In fact, let's start right here. ASAP Mimic said, have you guys discussed your preferred offseason? What likely outcome makes you guys feel the best about the team going into next year? So this is for me, and you guys can tell me how you feel on this, obviously, but for me, I keep running into, when I think about what is the best path, the challenge is not knowing what the other paths do offer. For example, if they go the cap space route, what does that ultimately offer to them? Are there players willing to take a little bit of a pay cut in order to squeeze in more talent with the limited space the Lakers have versus if they go the above the cap route? Are they then able to land somebody with potentially a mid-level exception that can be a difference maker? Are there trade opportunities out there for them? In absence of knowing exactly what options are on the table for them, it can be a little bit difficult. But generally speaking, I want to see the Lakers finally land two-way players that could play both sides of the ball. They haven't had enough of them over the last few years. They've got to find more guys who can be two-way talents. Everybody in the NBA is looking for them, but that's what you need specifically at the big and at the wing position. That is, without getting into specific names, that is what I think is a successful offseason will look like for the Lakers. Where are you guys at? Like, what do you think is the best path for LA, and what ultimately would be the ideal offseason for them?
Yeah, I think the way you laid it out is where I land as well. Like, whether it's at the three or at the five, I want a legitimate starting caliber two-way talent there. I think the nice thing, the luxury for Rob Pelinka is whether it's through Ayton picking up his option or retaining Marcus Smart, you have like a decent backup plan for either position. But that's all they are, is their backup plans. And so if you get, let's say you get a three, but you have Ayton at the five, I feel okay with that. You get a five, but you have Marcus Smart at the three, I feel okay with that. Yeah. A substantial upgrade at one of those two spots, I think, is like the non-negotiable. This is something we need to accomplish this summer. from there, you know, in terms of the rest of the roster, I just want to see one or two wins on the margins. This is a team that hasn't won on the margins in recent years. And I would love to have a conversation where it's like, you know, we're in November and we're like, wow, this veteran minimum guy is like a legit rotation piece for us. Or this, you know, this guy that we picked up as a two-way player is like legitimately playable for us. Marcus is hurt and is going to be out for, you know, 3 weeks. And this two-way guy can just step in and guard the ball and knock down an open catch and shoot three for 3 weeks for us. Like, I just want to see some wins on the margins for this front office. I think that's something that's been a deficit for this front office in recent seasons.
I agree with everything you guys have said. I think to Jason's point, between the two, I would feel more comfortable with Marcus being the starter longer term. Definitely. Than DA. Mm-hmm. So I think that naturally leads to prioritizing the center spot. And if there is an upgrade there, I would prefer to replace DA, keep Marcus as the starter rather than keep DA as the starter, replace Marcus. I would like them to, like, along similar lines, I'd like them to add a long-term piece. I think one of the indictments of the current front office over the last few transaction cycles has been, since they've acquired Luka Doncic, they have not added one long-term piece that you could expect to be on like the 2028 or 2030 Lakers. Maybe it's a new Thero. We'll see how he continues to develop, but that is a second round pick that you added, right? Like, they have not, they tried to go get Mark Williams, but since then it's been a bunch of short-term solutions and guys that, like DeAndre Ayton, Marcus Smart, Jake LaRavia, they're not going to be on the 2030 Lakers. So it's like, I think they need to find some, like, if it is, that's where we talk about some of the top guys, whether it's a Walker Kessler, Jalen Duren, Herb Jones, Peyton Watson, like those guys are difficult to acquire. But if they were to acquire one of those types of guys, that is a piece that you could see longer term. Okay, Luka, Austin, plus this player, that's like part of LA's foundation moving forward. So I think they need at least one starting upgrade, ideally two, but at least one. Ideally, that player is also someone young enough to fit with the core longer term. And then to Jason's point, I think they need to nail the margins. And like, really, if they end up using an exception, maybe it is keeping one of their own guys. But like, if they're going out and adding new players, I would like them to depart from their convention here of adding just guys who are former lottery picks or who have buzzy names, guys who have been previously hyped. There was a clip that just went viral about breaking down LA's recent mid-level exception guys. It's been Kendrick Nunn, Montrezl Harrell, Lonnie Walker, Gabe Vincent, and then split between Jake and DA. And it's like, those guys were relative hits and misses, but none of those guys ended up being like bona fide starting level guys that you would ideally like every team kind of finds that one starting level or six man level guy with one of their big exceptions. The Lakers have not. It's been a lot more misses than hits. And so I would like to see them depart from, oh, you were a lottery pick four years ago, or, oh, you know, you had a nice playoff run, like, let's overpay you. I would like them to actually bring in guys who, like, forget the name, look at the actual skill set and what they bring to the roster.
And I think the important thing to remember with something like that, when we're talking about winning in the margins, that's something that we may not be able to have. As Jason said, we want to be able to have that conversation in November. That's not necessarily something that's going to make fans feel better in July or in August when we're looking at this roster. That might mean finding a player where on the surface you go, eh, okay, that guy's fine. And then that guy winds up being a much bigger, more important piece. Winning in the margins may not be something that is evident immediately when the Lakers put the roster together. Now, obviously, if you go get LeBron signs a veteran minimum or whatever, like, that's not what we're talking about with winning in the margins. That would be great in terms of finding value, but winning in the margins means taking a player that becomes a diamond in the rough for you and is somebody that may not have a very positive perception around the NBA, or at least a neutral perception around the NBA, but then in your system, you're able to elevate that player on that team. So that is, I think, the other thing to remember here. Winning in the margins may not be a victory that you get to celebrate until we actually get into the season. Obviously, it's more important that it actually happens than when we get to celebrate it. But if you're wanting to fist pump and get super excited about the Lakers this summer, winning in the margins may not be something that's evident immediately and something that you need to get or you're going to be able to get excited about. Instead, I think we'll spend a lot of time focusing on, well, hey, they added this guy to be their starting three or this guy to be their starting five or whatever. And then it's, can those pieces in the margins step up and can the Lakers and their coaching staff make them a team that's better than the sum of their parts?
One thing quickly to add here is the more I've thought about it, my preferred strategy in terms of player acquisition avenues would be first restricted free agents, just because I think between Kessler and Durin and Watson and Eason, any of those guys would fit a longer term vision of the roster. I understand how restricted free agency works, how difficult it is to acquire those guys. But if you were able to add 2 to 5 million to what their projected number is with their current teams, I'd be willing to overpay one of those four guys to poach them from their incumbent teams. After restricted free agency, which I think is unlikely, but like that would be my dream pathway of, can you get a Kessler or Watson, et cetera. Yeah. If you cannot do that, then I look at the trade market and I say, okay, is Lou Dort potentially available from OKC, or is Jalen Suggs available from Orlando? Is one of these teams with a bloated cap sheet, are they willing to just get off of Christian Brown in Denver, Miles Turner in Milwaukee? Like, I don't love some of these names, but if you can just acquire it and potentially even get an asset from it, I would be open to it if it's like a starting level player. Then I think you look at unrestricted free agency, because just realistically, if the Lakers are at least somewhat running it back with some version of LeBron plus Marcus, LeBron plus Rui, LeBron plus Rui and Marcus, you're going to have pretty limited means to add a notable unrestricted free agent. So maybe you get in the mix for a Mitchell Robinson, a Robert Williams, a Kelly Oubre, someone like that. But those guys, I don't think are moving the needle as much as some of the aforementioned names. So I think in general, from the Lakers, my strategy is try to see if you can find a way to poach one of the RFAs. If you can't do that, then you turn to the trade market, see if you can acquire someone into space and get an asset out of that as well. Then you look at unrestricted free agency, because I think if you look at unrestricted free agency, it's just, there's not much out there, especially for the projected cap flexibility the Lakers are going to have, unless they just say buy Rui, buy Marcus, buy Luke. Like, and I don't see them doing that. So I think realistically, unrestricted free agency is like the third pathway there.
And getting an RFA may require going to the trade market to do it, because most of the time when RFAs move, it's via the sign and trade. So we'll see if perhaps that's something they have to go down in order to get one of those guys. The challenge, of course, with restricted free agency is, what if you sign a guy, if you come to terms anyway on an agreement verbally, let's say it's June 30th, you can't actually put pen to paper until July 6th. That's a long time for your cap space to be tied up. So we may be talking about a sign and trade situation there if you do go after one of those RFAs. But I do agree, those are your best candidates. Unfortunately, restricted free agency, kind of a mess in the NBA. It's not something the players have really pushed back against enough, but I think it just doesn't affect enough players to make it a major sticking point in CBA negotiations. But it's a very, very tough position for players to be in. And for a Lakers team that would love to have a real shot at a Walker Kessler, a Peyton Watson, players like that, restricted free agency is going to be a big barrier to it. But perhaps you negotiate a sign and trade with those guys, and then you can get something worked out there. Let's go here. Bringing back LeBron is the only real path I see for the Lakers to compete next year, other than some fringe and unlikely path. So guys, let me give you real quick my thoughts on where the Lakers are at with LeBron James. And that's that I think most likely they are a better team with LeBron. 5 years ago, that's a no-brainer. Duh. There's virtually no world where you could lose LeBron James and become a better basketball team. It's simply not happening, right? I do think there is a world where the Lakers could lose LeBron James and become a better basketball team. I don't know that the players that you would need, if we're talking about non-star level kind of role players, I think there are, if you were to get the right role players, there is a path to where you lose LeBron, you get the right role players in, you could actually be a better basketball team. I think it's a very narrow path, and I don't think many of those players are actually available in free agency this year. That's why I keep falling back on, you need to re-sign LeBron James, bring him back, because I don't see the opportunity there to replace him. But if you told me you could get a highly athletic big plus a wing. There's a world now with a 41-year-old LeBron James where you could be a better team without him. I just don't know that the path is there to become that team.
I don't think you can be better without LeBron. I think you could be better than you were last year with LeBron, but it would be through talent acquisition, if that's the point that you're trying to make. Yeah. I just think LeBron's a really good basketball player, and I think that in a vacuum, adding him versus not having him is a talent add. But yeah, I think there's a version of this summer where they let LeBron walk, they add talent, and end up being better this year than they were last year. I just think they should also be trying to retain LeBron if that's the case.
Agreed.
Let me pose a hypothetical to you guys. So I did a big off-season breakdown yesterday on my show, and I went through different cap scenarios in terms of, okay, this is like creating cap space, and these are some of the pathways they could take. This is over the cap. This is with LeBron, without LeBron, et cetera. Tried to talk through every conceivable scenario. So one of my pathways without LeBron that I came up with was like, okay, so you lose LeBron, you have this cap space, you can acquire, let's say Christian Brown is making $21 million into your cap space. You also get an asset from Denver out of that. You sign Robert Williams. And then you also do a separate trade where you trade, I think I had Vando, DK, a first, a swap, and a second for Herb Jones and Eve Misi. So now, and then a DA opts out because you're like, hey, we're bringing in Williams, we're bringing in Misi, we're replacing you. Like, you can stay under contract, but you're going to be our fourth or third string center. Mm-hmm. You're not playing anymore. Your value's tanked, and DA opts out. So now your starting group is either Williams or Misi. Like, Williams is better, but you kind of have to keep him in bubble wrap. It gets a little dicey there. Are you going? I think they're keeping Rui in this scenario as well. So maybe you go Rui, Herb Jones, Austin, Luka, and then like Christian Brown off the bench. And I mean, you start talking through it, and it's like, is that group better than? And I think that's like a semi plausible outcome there of like guys you could actually acquire with that cap space. Like, you can also go the RFA route and try to get a Watson or a Kessler, but that's basically all of your cap space if you're keeping Rui or if you're keeping Marcus. So it just gets pretty dicey there, where, I mean, there's a version where you're just replacing LeBron with Peyton Watson. There's a version where you have more depth, but you don't have the same top end talent, same shot creation, playmaking. Like, once you actually talk it out and look at the cap sheet, it's difficult to come up with a scenario where they're actually better without LeBron.
Jovan, you brought him up a couple of times. Where are you at on Christian Brown? Because I was asked about him a bunch last night, and I said, I'm worried just because it's a five-year commitment. He's got 5 years under contract at over $20 million. If you're right on him, you're fine. But if his shooting percentage is in any way indicative of what's going to be moving forward, which is very low 30% here this last season, or if his production is tied to Jokic, that could become a very devastating contract to have on your books. Where are you at on Christian Brown in general? Because you brought him up a few times. Like, are you for?
He's just a guy that I think will, more so just because he's a guy that I think will be available. And I think that's also indicative of like the options that are out there. There's just not, sure. Teams aren't just like, you're not just getting Herb Jones dumped into your cap space. You're going to have to give up something and give up some real draft capital for that, right? So I use him more as like, even Miles Turner, for example. I'm not as high on Miles Turner either. I don't think he checks many of the boxes you would want from a center position. I just use those guys as an example of two guys that I think those teams will want to get off of. With Denver, they're trying to keep Peyton Watson, so they need to get off Christian Brown or Cam Johnson. And if you can get Christian Brown plus an asset, plus a protected first or whatever they're giving up for him, like, you would, I think, at least consider that. I'm probably higher on Brown than the consensus, just because I think you look at his first 3 years, he showed a real trajectory there, real growth, and was an above average shooter in all 3 years. His third year, he shot 40% on threes, had a terrible shooting year, but I don't know if he'll get back to being who he was a couple years ago, but I'm betting that if you look at 3 out of the 4 years he's played, he's been an above average shooter. I would bet on that sample size and him just having a down year for some reason. I mean, 2 years ago, 15 points a game, six rebounds, shot 58% overall. I think it was actually 42% on threes. So like, this was a guy who, athletic, tough defender. I mean, there's a reason why they picked him over Peyton Watson to give that big contract. Now, I don't love the contract. That's where you would need an asset, and there is some risk involved in that. But depending on the Lakers' pathways and like the way they're going, getting a young player who you're kind of betting on bouncing back, plus getting an asset for that, I think that could be good business potentially. But I am lower on him than several of the other guys. Like, I'd rather have Herb Jones, and I'd rather just give up a first and something for Herb Jones. But who knows if New Orleans even accepts that, right? So it's I think he's a guy that's actually out there that will be available. That's the only reason I bring him up.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up Herb Jones, because I've got concerns there too. I need to talk about him real quick. And Jason, I'm going to throw Herb Jones to you here. Here's my concern. It's that I was all in on Herb Jones last year, year before. Had a season shooting 42% from three, roughly. Now that's looking like the outlier. Four of his five seasons from deep, he's been below average, including the last two. Where are you at on Herb Jones as a Lakers target? I'm starting to get worried that the outlier year was the good shooting year from three, and what he really is a below average three-point shooter.
Again, I kind of, it's a conversation of value to me. Like, I do not think Herb Jones is the we're giving away multiple first round picks type of player. I think that when you dig into specifically Herb Jones as a shooter, I think he's guarded as a shooter the same way that most 3-and-D players are. And what I mean by that is he's not Jared Vanderbilt, where teams are just going to straight up leave him completely wide open every single time. He has a certain amount of like respect in the way that he's guarded like a normal basketball player, which I think is worth mentioning here. I also think he brings a lot of useful athletic traits to the table. My biggest issue with Herb is more of the health side and just whether or not he can actually stay on the court more than anything else. But ultimately, at his age, at his salary number, with his contract length, if you could get him for a first-round pick, I think it's a deal I'd do every time.
All right. I mean, some potential options out there.
I just want to state this, too. Like, the more we discuss any player, we can talk ourselves in or out of them. Like, I think there's an element here of no one is perfect. And every player that the Lakers potentially acquire, whether it's in free agency or trade or whatnot, has some drawbacks to them, whether it's health or three-point shooting or their contract or potentially all three of those things. And like, I just think, in my opinion, the status quo just is not good enough. And the Lakers are not in that conversation with OKC and San Antonio. So it's like, if we look at the clear deficiency on the roster or couple deficiencies, it's like overall defensive talent and athleticism. And so I'm looking at players that check those boxes, and are they potentially going to have some drawbacks with the contract or the health or the shooting? Potentially. But I want to address, if I'm the Lakers, I want to address the glaring need that like every other contender has a major advantage over them with. So that's where I'm like, some of these guys, like, yes, I don't love Herb Jones's contract. I don't love his health history. I don't love Christian Brown's contract. But like, I also think those guys are better basketball players than, say, Luke Kennard or than Rui, or at least better in like a playoff context. So that's where I would lean, you know, that way.
Yeah, no. I think every player is going to have their flaws, and putting the puzzle pieces together in a way that minimizes the flaws and magnifies the strengths is part of the game of roster building and figuring all of that out. Interesting candidates, though, for the Lakers to go after. And every player, we're going to have to weigh what are the pros and cons of them. All right, we're going to get more into some of your questions, your comments in just a moment. First, let's give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Use the link in the description down below. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly with Prize Picks. Guys, we got game four, pivotal game four in the NBA Finals coming up. Excited for that. I see like Dylan Harper, 3.5 rebounds. He's been doing a nice job. He's cleared that in all five of his last five games.
They're going to bump his minutes too. I think they're going to continue to play that three guard lineup more and more over the course of the series. I like over there or more. What is the Cat points line?
Let me find that. Cat is 17.5.
I like that one.
You like more?
I also
there?
Like I like OG 24.5 PRA.
Ooh, that was one that I was looking at as well. Yeah, I do like that. All right, we're gonna go with those three then. $10 entry fee, win you $35. We got Dylan Harper, Cat, and OG Anunoby. You guys want to get in on it? Use the link in the description down below. The code, it's HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks, and we appreciate them sponsoring the show. All right, guys, let's get to this one here. What if we take back a bad contract for a first and seconds? Give Denver a first for Watson and two firsts for Trey Murphy and Robinson and Dean Wade for room exception. So I guess in this scenario, you're probably, you know, where does LeBron fit? Where does Rui fit, right? And all of that. But the idea of using some of your cap space to absorb a bad contract, getting an asset for that, and then flipping that asset into a player that you really want.
I don't think two firsts is enough for Trey Murphy.
Agreed.
I think people are going to be surprised by the Trey Murphy price. I think Trey Murphy's starting at three firsts.
My concern with the Pelicans in general, because we go, you hear fans of a lot, it's not just Lakers fans of a lot of teams talk about Pelicans players, talk about Trey Murphy, talk about Herb Jones, a little bit of Eve Misi as well. Can we get these guys? I think what we've seen for the last few years from the Pels is they view themselves as though they're a pretty good team, as though they are, they've just had bad luck on the injury front. And if they can get their guys healthy, they're not as bad as everybody thinks they are. As long as that's their mindset, I don't know that they move off of these guys. I think they want to continue to give this thing a shot. I don't agree with them, but that seems to be their mindset right now. I think getting the Herb Jones trade, the Trey Murphy trade, I think it's going to be more difficult than we would initially think of on the surface, because we think of the Pels as this bad team that should sell off talent. I don't know that they're going to.
Yeah. I guess so. I mean, what are some bad contracts the Lakers? Like, I guess it's, is it Christian Brown? Is it Miles Turner?
Yeah, those are the two that come to mind.
But if I'm Milwaukee, I don't, as much as I might want to get off Miles Turner's contract, I'm not attaching a first to that just because I'm in a situation where I'm probably going to be rebuilding soon. So I want to keep as many of my firsts as possible.
I don't think there's any chance Denver attaches a draft pick to Brown either.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the contract. And also you have to remember that if you are taking on a contract that is impacting your cap space, so now that is less money to spend elsewhere, or depending on the context of some of these trades. I think the Murphy numbers, or you're not getting Trey Murphy for two firsts. I think he would be somewhere right now if you could get Trey Murphy for two firsts.
Yeah,
I agree.
Somebody would have already taken him. All right, let's go here. Brandon said Vando, DA, Laravia for Turner. If restricted free agents aren't real options, get IO, 15 to 20 million, only 6'4", but 6'11 wingspan. Dalton Connect picks for Justin Champagne, seconds for Washington, elite rebounder, Josh Hart type player, have future first, cap space, room exception. Starting with Miles Turner, guys, I've got worries about the rebounding side of things for a Lakers team that wasn't great rebounding anyway. I do think there's a bit more value perhaps than we were talking about a few months ago in terms of a floor spacing big, just based on the way the playoffs have played out and kind of what's working to pull Wemby out of the paint and how you can do something there. But I don't know, Jason, where are you at on Miles Turner as a potential Lakers target or a long-term fit at the center position?
I kind of put him in the same boat as like kind of what we were talking about with Christian Brown, where it's like, if you don't have any other option on the table, every other plan you have falls through and you feel like you can get it done without giving up anything. I do think that Miles is a useful basketball player, but of all of the centers that we've listed, like I'd rather have Gobert than Miles Turner personally, even considering the fact that Gobert would probably cost something. Champagne is one of my faves. Don't know if he's worth a first. I really, really like Justin Champagne. Not the shooter that his brother is, but he is a extremely useful, just like kind of multi-purpose athlete. But yeah, giving up a pick 25 for him at that point, I'd rather just use pick 25 on a young player.
Agreed. I think with Turner, I still think you need the lob threat with Luka, and we saw with DA, Luka can turn non-traditional lob threats into lob threats. Like, I mean, DA can do that, but it's not how he wants to play necessarily. He wants to operate more in the short role, operate more in the pocket, and be taking those little floaters and little jumpers rather than being, he doesn't want to be Clint Capella, as he famously said during the season. So I think just looking at Miles Turner is even worse at that than DeAndre Ayton. And I think there would be a limitation there to trying to turn him into a traditional lob threat. So you'd have to spam pick and pops, which I think would be interesting. You could shift the Lakers offense into more of a five outlook, but I still think the best version, just think about like some of those monster first quarters where Luka has 12 to 16 points, DA's gotten a few dunks or layups, and the Lakers have really demoralized the opponent with that attack. I just think it would look a lot different with a guy like Miles Turner in there, and a lot different in a negative way. So you look at that, you look at the rim protection. I think he does. He would be an upgrade over DA as a rim protector, as a defensive anchor. But then you look at the rebounding, and that's where this is a guy who's constantly, he's similar to Jaren Jackson Jr., like in that 5, 6, maybe 7 rebound range where you really need strong front court rebounders around him. Now with LeBron and Luka, you could argue, hey, you have two of the best. I mean, Luka's statistically arguably the best wing and guard rebounder in the league. LeBron is still up there. So, maybe you could talk yourself into it that way, but I think that would be a limitation as well. And I just think about him trying to match up with Isaiah Hartenstein or Cat or some of these guys. And like, I don't think Turner's at that level. So I think to me, he'd be at the bottom of my list of like realistic guys. I think I have a center ranking coming out with top 15 targets. He's 12th for me on that list. So that's where I have him.
This deal in particular, you're shedding Vando. So you've got one extra year salary that you're shedding in Jared Vanderbilt, $25 million in negative value contract. Would you do this deal specifically? You're effectively turning a negative contract in Vando, Laravia, DA into Turner. You haven't found another big. Are you saying yes to this?
I would rather have Turner than those three, I think. Yeah. But it would be dependent on how you go about adding to. I still think you would need to add that. I mean, you're not adding Aaron Gordon to this, right? But the Aaron Gordon type, or like I would want a bigger, more athletic, like OG Anunoby, Aaron Gordon type added to the front court to offset some of Turner's physical limitations. And one thing quickly on Io, I think in that price point, Minnesota is just matching it. Like he's not a restricted free agent, but if he's like the Lakers are offering me 18 a year, I think Minnesota is going to pay him 18 a year. So I think you'd have to go into at least the low 20s to have a shot at poaching Io.
I mean, they spent 4 second-round picks on him. And I mean, it's not unprecedented for a team to let a guy walk after spending a bunch of seconds. I mean, the Lakers just did it with Dorian Finney-Smith. The difference is that between that trade happening and them letting him go, they got Luka Doncic. So it was like a fundamental change in kind of like their trajectory. So I would be surprised if Io was allowed to walk.
Typically, teams are going to have that conversation ahead of time with that player. Like, hey, yo, if we're going to spend 4 second-rounders on you, What do you think it's going to take to keep you next summer, right? They've already kind of got a sense of what that's going to be. So I don't think Io ultimately leaves Minnesota. I would love him as a Lakers target. I think there's squeakier wheels in terms of the wing position, the big position, but Io would be a great fit for the Lakers. Frankly, he'd be a great fit on a lot of teams because of his ability to play both sides of the ball. Ova East said, Lakers aren't as far away from winning as some people think. There's an avenue for LA to excel. Keep Rob off the phone. He's shown for 6 seasons he's unable to make good trades. Luka was a handout. I love that, guys. The whole like anything Rob does well, nope, doesn't count. He didn't do that. Doesn't count. Anything he did poorly, no, that counts. That does count. To me, I think we should look at the entire ledger, put it all together. Did the Luka thing fall on his lap? Maybe it did. He also, I thought, negotiated the hell out of that thing with the way they were able to keep things quiet and kind of played that against the Mavs and the Mavs' desire to keep things quiet. So, look, I'm not going to
give up Austin or a second.
Give up Austin in that deal, right? I just don't think it's something where I think there's plenty of things to be critical of Rob of and plenty of things that you can lean into without having to omit the things that he's done well. I think he has made some good trades. The biggest criticism, I think, for me was the margin moves. As Jason was talking about earlier, you got to win in the margins, and that's an area, I think, where he has consistently struggled in over the course of his tenure.
I actually want Rob to pick up the phone because, as I've stated on here, as I've stated on here, the last offseason trade the Lakers made was August 2022 for Pat Beverly. The Lakers sat out three consecutive off seasons in terms of making a trade to the roster. Of course, like, they purchased second round picks or, you know, little like draft trades in terms of that, but like actual acquiring a rotation level player or making a move for a rotation level player, they have not made an offseason trade in three straight summers. So it's time. And talking through again, like, you know, RFA, I would say, is unlikely, but after RFA, I think you have to be looking at trades. Like, to me, the best version of this roster probably is via trade rather than signing somebody. So Rob needs to get on the phone and start calling people and make a trade actually in the offseason.
Agreed. Got to find something out there. Are all three of you going to be in Vegas next month? Yes. I don't know my exact dates yet.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah, me neither. But I know we're going.
Yep. Io at 20 is a better value and fit than Austin Reeves.
Thoroughly disagree. Io had a big playoff game.
Like, Austin compared... Austin at what number is my, like, Austin, because sure. I would say my perspective on this is Austin at on a max versus Austin at 35, 38. Like, those are two totally different conversations in my opinion. So it depends on what that Austin number is. Like, Austin on a max, yes, I would agree with the value part. The fit part, I think Io's more of a six man, whereas I know a lot of people in the chat think Austin's a six man. I think he's clearly a starter, but Io at 20 versus Austin at 35, like, I think it's clearly still Austin.
466 points generated in pick and rolls for Io Desunmu this season between the two teams. Austin Reeves, despite literally missing like 40% of the season, had 817. Like, there's just a whole different level of high volume ball handler you're talking about with Austin. I agree with Jovan that, like, it gets more complicated with the salary number. My question would be this: in a team build where you're trying to win with Luka, where we know you need that, like, secondary ball handler type, could Io Desunmu be the secondary ball handler for a Luka Doncic championship contender? I'm big time no on that. Whereas Austin, I think, like, maybe, yeah. So, like, that to me, it's more like Io is more akin at a much lesser level, but to like an OG and an OB at the guard spot, meaning like a role player guard who can do some stuff on the ball, than he is a legitimate high volume ball handler. And obviously Io is not in the same stratosphere as OG. I just mean it as more as like the player archetype.
Yeah, I like Io a lot, but he's more the guy that you add to a couple of, like, Io in a guard rotation with Austin and Luka makes a lot of sense. Io taking over the Austin Reeves role, that's probably him punching above his weight class there a little bit, particularly on the, you know, on the offensive end of the floor. Anyway, Marvin Bagley, Keon Ellis, Ochai Agbaji, Rob and Kenrich Williams, Charles Bassey, Gary Trent, real players. Marvin Bagley is a 90th percentile rim protector. I mean, are these some of the diamonds in the rough that the Lakers could one of these guys ultimately working out be what winning in the margins looks like?
I'm kind of out on Keon. Marvin Bagley's been playing for bad teams for so long, it's hard to even tell you what he could do in a serious context. O'Shea's a guy I've had some interest in over the years because he had a bad shooting year this year, but he had a really good shooting year the year before, and I just think he's a really useful athlete. Kenrich, I'm skeptical that the Lakers will get any Thunder player, but I do like Kenrich. Kenrich has a little bit of like a shot pass decision making issue sometimes, or I feel like he'll force the issue a little bit. I'm kind of out on Gary Trent too. I think he's a terrible defender.
It's interesting with Gary Trent. He's had a reputation as being a plus defender, but it's going all the way like years to when he was with the Blazers.
I know.
I don't know why it continues to persist, because I hear it still all the time. Like, oh, Gary Trent's a good defender. He hasn't been in a long time. Let's go here. Having two weak defenders in your backcourt is very hard to win in the modern NBA. I would love AR trade for Suggs and Tristan Da Silva, Wendell Carter Jr. type of deal. The one thing that I would add is, well, it's a good thing Luka and Austin aren't in the backcourt then defensively.
Yeah, exactly. You can have Austin and a good guard defender and Luka and a good forward defender.
I'm glad you made that distinction, because that's where I also see some overlap with New York. And New York, I think they have even a greater challenge. Like, we saw this last night in game 3 when Wemby was able to actually get the ball around the basket. When Mitchell Robinson isn't out there, they have absolutely no rim protection for Wemby. And like, I think Kat's doing a great job being physical with him, preventing him from getting open on those rolls, preventing him from even catching the ball close to the basket. But when Wemby catches the ball close to the basket, he's scoring on Towns basically every single time. And that is just one of the limitations there with Towns. For as good as he is at certain things defensively, he's not really a rim protector. And I say that to say, like, with the Lakers, if you're thinking about building out a defense with Austin and Luka, it's Austin is a backcourt defender. Luka's a frontcourt defender. Luka is not guarding guards. Like, I don't know how many times we have to say that. Like, Luka's often matching up with the lesser frontcourt threat, and that's an easier position to hide than it is a center or a rim protector. So if you have an awesome rim protector, an awesome wing defender, and another solid backcourt defender, I actually think you can build a pretty competent defense with Luka and Austin. And for what it's worth, their defensive rating together this season, I think they had a 113 defensive rating, which is around that top 10. So that's with DA and Rui and LeBron and several other guys being in those lineup combinations. So you give those guys like 2 to 3 above average defenders consistently, and I think you could build a pretty competent defense with them.
No, but Jovan, that doesn't count. That was the regular season, so it doesn't count, right?
there might be some diminishing returns there, but I just think the lineup data with Luka and Austin has been very positive. It was very positive last season. It was very positive this season. We didn't get to see it in the playoffs, unfortunately, but I think there's a proof of concept there.
They're in the 84th percentile defensively with the two of them on the floor. I think it part of it is, and there's legitimate concerns defensively. It's not that all of that can just be dismissed out of hand, that they're, I'm not saying those two are good defensive players inherently on their own, but can they be part of a good defensive system? I do. And I think part of the problem is for both Luka and Austin, when their shortcomings defensively do show, they show in very, very loud ways. We've had this conversation before. Whereas a player who, if their defensive shortcomings come with, say, their off-ball awareness, that's something that isn't quite popping on the screen to the same degree as if you're going to get beat off the dribble at the point of attack, if a team's going to ISO you and get you in that situation. So when they do have their defensive shortcomings really show, those are things that really get seared into the minds. And what I think it does is it over-amplifies what they actually are in terms of their defensive weaknesses.
Guys, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was regarded as the best player in the world before the last round revealed that he wasn't. But in that series, he was getting attacked relentlessly. Like, I just think the idea that you can't win, or that you have to have 5 players on the floor that can't get attacked. Like, for the record, the Spurs do have 5 players on the floor that can't get attacked, but every single one of them is pretty flawed offensively in one way or another. Like, it's just, generally speaking, when you have one of those guys, that's kind of part of the deal. And the best defenses just find a way to defend with them, understanding that they're going to get attacked, knowing how to layer your defense in a way that defends them and protects them. And yeah, I think it's a cop-out excuse to be like, we can't guard because of Luka, or we can't guard because of Austin.
All right, let's go here. If you guys had to build a 10-man rotation to win a chip, who would it be? Rules: only 2 stars must have played a game in 26. Each of you gets at least 1 pick. Names. So this is like doing a draft type of thing.
Yeah, that's a whole segment.
Yeah, that's a show for August for us to do. I appreciate the super chat. We're not going to have time to do a full like mock draft here on this question, going through and picking a full team and building out a team. I'm sure we all have players we would love to draft, but maybe we can re-engage with this question when we get deeper into the off season. Let's go here. Trade for Noah Clowney. I mean, Brooklyn kind of likes him, so I'm curious what the value would be there. And draft Luigi Suigo. I mean, he could be something, but are we even sure that he's coming over this year? I don't know if he is. I don't know. I'm not completely up to date on everything involving the draft. I've started all my draft prep stuff, but last I saw there was some talk about maybe he doesn't actually come over this year. We'll see what that ultimately looks like with him. Could be a high upside swing, but again, I'm not super deep into my draft prep just yet.
Yeah, I like Clowney, depending on the price.
Yeah.
Especially if you're getting off DK.
Problem is, Luka and AR are varying C grade defensively and A grade offensively. Recent champions need four starters, grade B offense, A defense, for example. MPJ, length, Jokic, Luka, AR won't win it.
Yeah, I just disagree. I think you can win a title with Luka and Austin as your two best players. You just have to be good defensively around them. And as a team, you have to defend well, and you have to be able to cycle good defenders in with them coming off of your bench. Like, again, Kat and Brunson are favored to win the championship right now.
One thing I want to mention, somebody threw out there, well, a lot of people will jump on, well, Austin needs to go, move off of Austin Reeves, all that kind of stuff. Who do you get? In exchange, like if Austin walks, okay, you have 20-ish, $21 million extra in cap flexibility if you're a below the cap team. You're not replacing Austin Reeves with that. And people jump to, oh, well, a sign and trade. Those are very, very difficult to execute. It doesn't mean they're impossible, but very hard to get something like that done. So I still think, even if you're on the side that, you know, oh, we think Austin can never work, you still want to re-sign him this summer. And at the very least, you're looking at next season trying to make a trade or something like that. And that's if you're on the side that says it can never, ever work. If you told me there's a sign and trade out there that lands Giannis for Austin or something, great, fine, right? I'm not going to complain. But in lieu of something like that, I think what most fans should probably be rooting for here is Austin Reeves re-signing with the Lakers, regardless of whether or not you think Austin Reeves is the long-term fit for this club.
I agree.
Patrick Williams. We'll do one more here. Patrick Williams for a bad contract or Sabonis, who could fit. If not Murphy, then Herb and a first. Trade Ayton and a first to Brooklyn for Sharp and Clowney. I guess let me say I like Domantas Sabonis. I hate the fit with Luka and the salary. I just don't think he's the right fit for LA.
Yeah, I mean, if you... Especially, I mean, depends on if you're keeping Austin in this scenario or not. But if you're trying to build Sabonis, Luka, and Austin together, I mean, good luck with that defensively. I think Sabonis is, to me, he might be the toughest, like, I don't know if you want to call him a great player or just a really good player or where you want to put him in, like, the league hierarchy. But I would say in general, he's, we kind of forget because he had an injury-riddled season, but I would say he's a top 50 player in the NBA. But among the top 50, he might be the toughest to actually fit into a lineup where you try to win a championship. Like he basically needs like Jaren Jackson Jr. next to him, or like a very specific, or, you know, Anthony Davis from a couple of years ago. Like he needs to be in a too big look where that other player can be the rim protector and like the primary defensive anchor. And he's sort of just out there, I guess, guarding, like, you know, helping off of a non-shooter or something, because if he's your primary rim protector, I think you have a clear ceiling of, I don't even know if you could win a round with him as your rim protector.
Agreed. All right, everybody, we appreciate all of you coming in. There's a few chat questions we didn't get to, but we will. I'll save those and get to them in the future here. Appreciate all of you for joining, though. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit that subscribe button. Turn on those notifications as well. Guys, this was great. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.
See you, boys.
Sorry, I know we're right up.